Rabbi Leff.
Okay, we are going to discuss Hanukkah, and I really want to finish it tonight, since in 2 weeks is going to be over Zmano Bottle Corbono. Start with a marshal. You'll see the relevance eventually. Imagine somebody walking down the street minding his own business, and somebody comes from behind and breaks both his legs with an iron pole. The guy is writhing in pain on the sidewalk, and the man with the iron pole comes over him and says, "I mean you no harm. I'm just an orthopedic surgeon who needs practice. So I broke your legs. I'm going to take you to my clinic. I'm going to set the legs, heal you, and in 6 months you're going to be walking like nothing ever happened. I'm not going to charge you." Does he owe that orthopedic surgeon any thank you?
No.
No, he owes him a lawsuit for breaking his legs. Because had he not broken his legs, he'd be walking like nothing ever happened 6 months earlier, because nothing would have ever happened. So don't break my legs and don't heal me. So if that's the case, we believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam controls this world, not Antiochus, not Paro, not Haman. So who got us into the Tzor of Yavon? The Ribbono Shel Olam. Who took us out of the Tzor of Yavon? The Ribbono Shel Olam. Who got us into the Tzor of Mitzrayim? The Ribbono Shel Olam. Who took us out? The Ribbono Shel Olam. So why do we owe many thanks? Don't put me into the Tzor, don't take me out. I didn't come to convince you not to celebrate Hanukkah, so there must be an answer. The answer is the marshal is not appropriate. The real marshal, that comparative to the situation, will be the following. Imagine a disease of the legs, which I made up. I have a right to make up any marshal I want. That's part of my contract here. I can begin to make up diseases. The disease has the following pathology. It incubates for 10 years from the time that you get it, and you don't even know you have it. And exactly to the second of 10 years from the time that you got it, the bones of the leg disintegrate, turn into dust, and the person's a cripple the rest of his life, and there's no cure. The only cure for this disease is if you catch it within the 10-year period, you break the person's legs, reset them, and they grow back normal. That's the cure. Now, go back to the guy walking down the street, minding his own business, but unbeknownst to him, he has this disease. And the orthopedic surgeon behind him is an expert in the disease, sees from the way he's walking that he has a disease, and there's 5 minutes left till the 10 years is up. What does he have to do? Find an iron pole and break this guy's legs pronto. Because if he waits 5 more minutes, that's it. There's no hope for a cure. So he does it. He breaks the guy's legs. He goes over to him and says, "You're a lucky man." He said, "Can you explain to me why with both of my legs broken, I'm a lucky man?" He said, "Yeah, because in 5 minutes, had I not broken your legs, you would be a cripple for life. Now I'm going to take you to my clinic, set your legs, heal you, and in 6 months, you're going to be walking like nothing ever happened, and I'm going to charge you." Does he owe him a thank you now? For what? Not only for healing him and setting his legs, but for breaking them too, because that was part of the cure. Sometimes we can make ourselves, either as individuals or as a nation, spiritually sick. And if we would continue on without anything happening, the results would be disastrous. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes that the only cure is to put us into a tzara. And I'll explain a little bit how that works. And then he breaks our legs. But then that enables him now to cure us. So the breaking of the legs is part of the cure. And therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam deserves thank you, not only for the Yeshua, but for the Tzora too. The Shari Tshuva and Shar Beis says this idea, not the marshal, but he says that when a person has a Tzora and he's delivered from it, he should thank the Ribbono Shel Olam not only for the Yeshua, but for the Tzora too. And the way we said it, because otherwise it makes no sense to thank him for the Yeshua. Don't give me the Tzora, don't give me the Yeshua. But if the Tzora has a purpose to it, then it makes sense to thank you for both of them. And he brings a pasuk. Il mole lo nafalti lo kamti. If I didn't fall, I couldn't get up. Il mole lo yoshafti bachoshech lo hoya orli. If I didn't sit in the darkness, it wouldn't be light. The way I understand the pasuk is the following. Sometimes a person is walking very unsteadily, and if he continues walking like that, he'll fall off a cliff. So what happens is he falls down, and then, in order to get up, he has to put in effort. And when he gets up, he's walking steadily. He's not going to fall off the cliff. So the process of falling and then having to get up is what makes him now not be able to fall off the cliff. sometimes you're in the light and you don't appreciate it. You ignore it completely, right? And you take it for granted. In order to make you appreciate the light, we put you in a cellar where there is no light, take you back into that same light, now you appreciate it. So too, sometimes we have things and we ignore them, try to abandon them in Yiddishkeit, and we don't appreciate them. And when the Rabbanu Shlom sees that, says the Chofetz Chaim, he sometimes permits Goyim to threaten to take it away from us, or take it away, and when it's threatened to be taken away, or taken away, then you appreciate it. You appreciate things when they're threatened to be taken away, and take them for granted when you have them and don't appreciate them. So that's why the Sfasemis says that on Chanukah there were Masakin Halel veHodah. Halel is for the Yeshua and Hodah is for the Tzara. Hodah means an admission. I admit I needed that Tzara. It's not only the Yeshua that I'm thanking the Rabbanu Shalom, but for the Tzara too. And that's why I think the word Nes always represents something that saves you from a Tzara, a Nes. A Nes is two letters. Nun represents Nefila, and Samech is Somech Hashem L'chol HaNoflim. It's both things, the fall and the support. That's the Nes. And therefore, it's not enough, Pirsume Nisa is not enough just to be Mefarsim the Nes, to let her know God can do tricks. It's not the purpose. The purpose is to learn the lesson from that Nes, and therefore you have to understand the Tzara and the Yeshua together. I think this idea from the coming week Sedra, okay, I think we'll have time. The coming week Sedra, it says, the Habor Reik Ein Bo Mayim, Mayim Ein Bo Avon Nechoshim V'Akrovim Yesh Bo. That Maimer is brought down in Gemara and Shabbos. And right after that it says, Ner Chanukah Shinichu L'malam Yesrim Ma'am Apsula. So what's the connection between Ner Chanukah Shinichu L'malam Yesrim Ma'am and Habor Reik Ein Bo Mayim? So there's a million different Perushim. I'll tell you what I think. And that's the following. L'chora, if there's an Indian of Pirsume Nisa, then why didn't the Torah be Mefarsim, this Nes, that Yosef was thrown into a boar of Nechoshim Nakrovim, not just hint to it, Habor Reik Ein Bo Mayim, I gotta be Medayik, Mayim Ein Bo Nechoshim, tell me, Nes Godel Hoyokan. Yosef was thrown into a boar of, what's it called, of Nechoshim Nakrovim, he was saved. Pirsume Nisa. Why did the Torah hide it? The pshat is that really, if you only, a Nes has to be something that people learn from. And they understand what the purpose of it is. Because stam, to show people nisim, is not kvod shamayim, just the opposite. It implies that God didn't do it right the first time. Right? Because the natural order of the world, which the Rabbanu Shalom said is tov ma'od, isn't good enough. You have to change nature. So changing nature means that God didn't do it right the first time. But that's not really the pshat. Really the pshat is that the Rabbanu Shalom is getting our attention. It's really just as much nature, it's built into the system. But it's getting our attention to teach us something. So the Torah is not mefarsim nisim that nobody learned anything from. And over here, nobody learned anything from it. Because either the brothers didn't know they were Nechoshim HaKrovim, and if they did, they ignored it. Otherwise, how did they sell Yosef? If they thought he was safe from the Nechoshim HaKrovim. So it's a nes that nobody learned anything from, there's no Pirsumei Nisa. Same thing, Ner Chanukah Shinichu L'malam Yesrim Ma'amah, you can see it L'malam Yesrim Ma'amah, but only once in a while you'll pick up your eyes and you'll see it and you'll say, wow, big miracle, oil burnt, what's it called, in 8 days. So, but that's no big deal, because that's what the Rabbanu Shem can do, make oil burn 8 days. He can make the oil, he can make vinegar burn. That's the big deal. Elamai, what does it mean? What am I supposed to learn from it? So it's only if it's in your line of vision can you appreciate what it's all about. So just like the Torah is not mefarsim nisim, you don't learn from, Ner Chanukah Shinichu L'malam Yesrim Ma'amah is also possible. Because you won't learn from it, you'll just see it and be inspired by the fact that some supernatural thing happened. Okay. And therefore the Rambam says, Mitzvah laharos ulegalos es hanes. The mitzvah to show what happened, and also to legalos, to understand, to uncover what's it all about. So in order to understand really the Nes of Chanukah, you have to understand the Tzara too. So let's start with the Alanisim of Chanukah and see that there's a tremendous difference between it and the Alanisim of Purim. Even though in most cases their structure is symmetrical and should be. They're both the same thing, just different occurrences. Bimei Mordechai v'Esther b'Shushan Abira. starts out by introducing the tzaddikim of the Maisa and put it into perspective in Shushan Abira. Same thing, Bimei Matasyo Ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonai Uvanav. It introduces the tzaddikim, and basically Kohen Gadol means it was in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Kishomar Aleim Haman Arasha. Now we introduce the bad guys, when Haman stood against them. Kishom the Malchus Yovan HaRishalam Chisrael. Symmetrical. Next, okay, we know who the good guys were. We know who the bad guys were. What did the bad guys want to do? They made a problem. Bikesh lahashmid la'arugul abed. The next word by Chanukah should have been Bikshu lashkicham tarasecha. But it doesn't say that. It says Kishom the Malchus Yovan HaRishalam Chisrael lihashkicham tarasecha. It could have said the same thing by Purim. Kishomar Aleim Haman HaRashah lahashmid la'arugul abed. Why by here it says Bikesh, and here it doesn't say Bikshu lahashkicham? I think the answer is the following. Some say that because the Yevanim didn't only want to do it, they did it. They made us forget the Torah. But then it should have said, Hishkicham Torah Secha, not Lihashkicham. I think it means something different. The Tzara of Haman began when he wanted to destroy us. His decree to destroy us was the Tzara. The day before he made any decree, there was no Tzara. Masha'en Ken Yavan, before they made any decrees, before they wanted to do anything against us actively, they already were a tzara. Just their emergence as a world power was an influence on Klal Yisrael, which is dangerous. Even before they made any decrees. Proof? There were plenty of misyavnim before they made any decrees. So Yavan was already a spiritual danger before they made any decrees against us. Just their emergence as a power influenced many Jews to become like Yavan. That was the tzara. Therefore, kishaam the machus yovan rishah before bikshu anything. That was lashkicham tarasecha. Mashenke, the tzara of Haman didn't start till bikesh lashmin la'aruglabin. Okay. So, what was the tzara of Yovan? The kitzur Yovan represented a philosophy of life that denied any inner spiritual value to this world. They only recognized the externals of the world: external wisdom, chokhmah chitzonis, external might, external beauty, right? External power. Everything was externals. And even their gods were not spiritual beings. They were basically supermen and superwomen who had all the foibles of human beings. They stole, they murdered each other, they committed adultery with each other, except they were supermen and superwomen. So they were basically human beings, right? Godly human beings, but not spiritual gods. They denied completely any spiritual inner value to this world. And I think the name Yavan hints to that. Yavan is spelled Yud Vav Nun. Those three letters are lines. They have no inside. There's no toch, right? It's only an external thing. And not only that, not only are they lines, external, but when you deal with the world and materialistically, physically, you measure it in quantity. When you deal with it spiritually, you measure it in quality. In quantity, there are three generic quantities: small, medium, and large. That's Yavan. Three lines: small yud, medium-sized vav, large nun. Three external lines, three generic sizes, and they also are parallel. They never meet because the physical, material world has no unity. Everything is separate to itself. It's only the spiritual world that unites things, and there was no unity. And not only that, the word Yavan backwards is noi, beauty, because there is beauty in this world, but the beauty in this world really is a reflection of the inner beauty. It's not just skin deep beauty. They took beauty and turned it inside out. So in any case, that's why they say that the Nisayan of Golus Yavan was Pritzus, Gili Arayis, the whole idea of external things, right? Erva is external, as opposed to Tznua, which is the internal values of the world. Okay. In any case, why did we need, why were Jews vulnerable to this influence? And which Jews were vulnerable? So the Bach says that the weakness of that generation was Yisrashlu ba'avodas Hashem. It's a little different shot than what that means. I'll tell you what I think it means. There's a difference between avoda and mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is doing the tzivui Hashem. Avoda is doing the ratzon Hashem. Okay? Yehi ratzon b'lfanecha, avodas, tefila, korbanos, nasa ritzoni, reach nichoach, ishel Hashem, nachas ruach, nasa ritzoni. What's the difference between ratzon Hashem and mitzvah Hashem? The Navi complains that Klal Yisrael keep the Torah, tzav letzav, kav lekav, ze'er sham, a mitzvah here, a mitzvah there. L'chora, what's the problem? That's the way we keep the Torah. We don't, you know, sit in a sukkah, wave estrog and lulav, eat matzah and blow shofar all at once. Someday you have this mitzvah, someday a different mitzvah. So what's the problem? Tzav letzav. If I were to ask you, how many things does the Rabban Hashem want from us? So you tell me 613. That's not true. That's just the Rosh Prokim. There's branches and sub-branches, so a lot of things. Every time you turn around, something else. Eat this, don't eat that, think this, don't think that, say this, don't say that, dress like this, don't dress like work now. It's not true. The Rabban Hashem doesn't want a lot of things from us. Because as the Rambam says in Mor Nevuchim, Hu Echad Uritzono Echad. God is the ultimate one, and his Ratzon is one. He doesn't have a lot of things he wants. He doesn't have a lot of things altogether. He's all one. So the Rabban Hashem only wants one thing from us. What is that? Emuna Yerushamayim. That's it. Tzadik be'emunaso yichya bocha bokuk ve'midam alechad, and mo Hashem Elokecha shoelim achim li'iras Hashem Elokecha. That's it. What does that mean to be a Yerushamayim? That every second of your existence, whatever you're saying, thinking, or doing, you do in a way that's appropriate for Tzelem Elokim. That's all. That's all the Rabban Hashem wants. That is so overwhelming and so all-inclusive that we can't relate to it. So imagine a gigantic light bulb that is so big and so bright you can't look at it. It's too big to look at it. You take it and enclose it in a globe, and you cut in the globe 613 little windows all around the globe. Through each little window, you can see one small portion of the light bulb, which is seeable. There's only one light bulb, but you're seeing it from many, many different vantage points. How do you know what the whole light bulb looks like? If you look through all 613 windows consecutively, you get a composite picture of the light bulb. That is mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are windows to that one all-encompassing Ratzon Hashem. That's why sometimes the Torah says, Shmiya Likol Hashem, listen to the Ribono Shel Olam, and sometimes it speaks about Shmiya Bikol Hashem, listening into what the Ribono Shel Olam said. Meaning, doing the mitzvah is doing what the Ribono Shel Olam said. If you do it the way you're supposed to do it, you'll open a window. And that window will reveal to you what that mitzvah is supposed to shed light on your entire life. Your values, your standards, your goals, your lifestyle. You're not supposed to just do the mitzvah. The mitzvah is supposed to teach you how to apply it, the Ratzon Hashem, to your entire life. Except you can't see it all at once. You have to see it piecemeal. Example, two examples. Shabbos. Shabbos is a very narrow mitzvah. One day a week, specific do's and don'ts. The person keeps Shabbos, but you're supposed to learn something from Shabbos that applies to the whole week. Shabbos is supposed to teach you that even though the physical material world is important and the Rabban Hashem created the world in 6 days, the goal of Shabbos is Ruchnius. So a person is supposed to learn from that that what he does during the 6 weeks should have its goal as being Ruchnius. But a person who works for, keeps Shabbos and the whole week he has one tachlis, earn another dollar, so he's listened to Hashem, kept Shabbos, but he didn't listen into Hashem, he didn't understand how to see what the Shabbos is supposed to teach me about the Ratzon Hashem, not just the Tzivui Hashem. Another example. I heard this maisa from my day school principal, Rabbi Alexander Gross. He was the principal of the Hebrew Academy of Greater Miami. The school is now named for him. He told me that his Rebbe was Rabbi Shlomo Feivel Mendelovich, who was the Benayel in Torah Vadas about 90 years ago, and the founder of Torah Mesorah. His Rebbe told him the following story. He was once invited to eat Friday night by a certain gvir, and the gvir wanted the kavod of this Rosh Hashiva eating in his house. So the men came home from shul, the man knocked on his door, opened the door, looked inside and turned white, was ready to faint. So Shlomo Feivel said, I realized something was wrong, something was not right on the other side of that door, and I was curious, so I peeked in. And right away I saw the problem. The house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and the housewife looked like she just came from Mars. He said, right away I surmised the problem. This poor woman was tired from preparing for Shabbos, so she probably said, I think I'll lie down for a few minutes and get up in plenty of time before the men come from shul to put the house in order, set the table. and she fell into a deep sleep, and she didn't wake up till they knocked on the door. So the house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and she was hovering somewhere between this world and some other world. So Shaga Feivel said, I assumed that this man was embarrassed to bring me into this house. But as things progressed, I saw that wasn't the problem, because he understood that I would understand that this is his wife's fault. He was in shul. You know what bothered him? On the table were the two challahs uncovered, without a challah cover. And he was afraid this Rosh Hashiv would think that he was an Amoritz. He didn't know you're supposed to cover the challahs. So in order to make it clear that that also was his wife's fault, and he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs, he starts yelling at his wife. You are lazy, incompetent. Don't you know you're supposed to cover the challahs? Now Rav Shaga Feivel says, now I know he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs. Rav Shaga Feivel said, at that moment, I thought to myself, this is the most absurd thing I ever saw in my life. Because one of the reasons we cover the challahs when we make kiddush is shlo yira hapas boshto, not to insult and embarrass the bread, because you're making a brach on the wine, which is less important before it. Now, I don't know, right? Maybe my wife bakes insensitive challahs. But like, I never came home from shul, said something not nice to the challahs. They ran off the table, locked themselves in their room until I could appease them. It happened with my daughters a few times. Never happened with my challahs. Never. Personally, I never saw an embarrassed challah in my life. And if any of you have seen one, I'm sure there's somebody professional that could help you. What does that mean? You're embarrassed to challah. Now, the simplest idea is that if you condition yourself not to embarrass inanimate objects, you'll never come to embarrass a human being. And here Rav Shaga Feivel says, is a man insulting his wife, embarrassing her publicly, in order to defend the honor of a piece of bread? Shmia likol Hashem, the minig, 100%. Shmia bikol Hashem, what does it mean? What are you supposed to learn from it? Zero. Yidden, who have this external view of Torah, do's and don'ts, do this, don't do that, but they don't appreciate the inner value, the lifestyle, the values of Torah, are very impressed by the externals of Greece. Because the externals of Greece is a lot, the glitter, the money, the power, right? The externals are much more impressive than the externals of Torah. But those who appreciate the internal values of Torah aren't affected by the externals of Greece, because you'll excuse the pun, the externals of Greece can't hold a candle to the internal values of Torah. So therefore the Jews who were in Yisrashil b'avodas Hashem, they kept mitzvahs, but they didn't keep it as avoda, they kept it stam as tzav l'tzav, those people were influenced by the Greeks. Like we said, when Jews don't appreciate that inner value of Torah, so the Rabban Shalom has to break our legs. And what does he do? He lets Goyim threaten to take it away, make decrees to take it away, so when the Goy says, you can't, then we say, we want. And that makes us appreciate it. So what did the Yevonim, what gezeiras did they make? L'hashkicham Torah Secha. Can't forget Torah Shebichsav, open up a chumash. You can forget Torah Shebal Peh. Their main idea was like this. We don't care if you have a Torah Shebichsav. Everybody has, you know, folklore. You can read stories, Bereishishmos, nice stories. But what makes it alive? What gives it a neshama? The Mishnah. Mishnah is the Osios neshama. It's the chiyus, it's the inner value of Torah Shebichsav. It makes it a living thing. That they decided, no. Lashkicham Torah Secha. Forget about that. And Lahavira Mechuke Ritzonecha. In modern Hebrew, Ha'avara in the bank means a transfer. Lahavira Mechuke Ritzonecha means a file. You can keep mitzvahs. We don't care. Everybody has folk customs they do. As long as it's external, we don't mind. But we don't want it to be Chuke Ritzonecha, God's will. Just a bunch of things to do, just a bunch of customs, right? That you can do. But not that it should be a way of life. So the Haviram, they wanted to transfer us, Mechuke Ritzonecha, to just a bunch of customs or whatever. And therefore they made specific Zeres. The famous one, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Bris Milah. Because those are the neshama. Shabbos is the neshama of the world. The world, the physical, material world is 6 days. Shabbos adds a neshama to that, an inner value. Bris Milah shows that there's something inside the goof, not just a body. It's not just a shell, right? That's the neshama of the body. And Rosh Chodesh is the neshama of time. Time is also a dimension. It's a shell. But you can infuse it with Kedusha, Kiddush HaChodesh. And then you bring Kedusha into time. So they wanted to obliterate all of that. And the Rambam, based on Midrashim, says two more things that they did. Pashtu Yedeyem b'mamonam u'bibnoseyem. They make zeres against Jewish money, right? The Midrash says that any material thing, not just animals, But any material thing that a Jew owned, you owned an MP3, you had to engrave on it, Ein lanu chelek b'elokei Yisrael. Because from a secular standpoint, money is an intrinsically valuable thing. Having it, just owning it, makes you important. But from a Torah standpoint, tzadikim chavivim aleihem amonim yosem igufan. But because they can use it for avodas Hashem. It's the inner value of the money, of what you use it for, that gives it value, not its external existence. So they wanted to make us take away any kesher to the Rabbanu Shalom from the money. Just leave it as an external thing. Women also. From a secular standpoint, women are basically judged on their external merits. They're objects. Right? Even in the progressive, liberated world, they still have Miss Universe, Miss America, Miss Israel pageants. And even though they fool themselves into thinking they're more refined today, because they have the women talking about their careers and reading poetry and other things that they write, but they do it in bathing suits, which has me think that it's not the papers and the poetry that's the ikar. So it's a chitzonius. Now, Shein Kein, in Klal Yisrael, a woman is the ikar, inner kedusha of Klal Yisrael. Why? Because unless you're a ger, what determines whether you have a neshama with kedushas Yisrael? One factor: who your mother was. If your mother was a plain, ordinary yidna, and your father was Genghis Khan, you're Jewish. And if your father was Moshe Rabbeinu and your mother was a goya, you're not Jewish. So what determines if a person has an nishmas Yisrael, kedushas Yisrael, a mother? And up until recently, mothers were women. So lemaisa, what's it called? The women is the women are the foundation of kedushas Yisrael. So those are the things that the Yavanim, and that's why by Yavan they weren't interested in destroying. They could have destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. They weren't interested in doing that. The two words that are what the Yavanim wanted to do was letame ulechalil, to defile and desecrate. Now, I don't know what defile and desecrate, they're Greek words, so I'll tell you what they mean in Hebrew. Chalal, lechalel, means, a chalal means an empty space, a vacuum. Chalal ha-shamayim. A chalal is a dead body, doesn't have a neshama, just a body, just a shell. A chalil is a flute, it's hollow on the inside. In fact, I'm sure that the word hollow in English comes from the word halal. Ches lamed lamed, H-O-L-L-O-W, hollow, and halal, I'm sure, have a connection. They wanted to hollow out Yiddishkeit, just leave the shell, but take out the inner value, to make it similar to their lifestyle. And the Kuzri says, whenever there was Kedusha, and you hollow it out, the vacuum that's caused, that's left, is Tumah. That's Latame. So they wanted to be metame and mechalil, right? So they make zeras against money, against the women. What did they make against the women? That, what's it called? Called besula haniseis tiboil lehegmon tchila. They wanted to take the kedusha out of marriage. Not kedusha anymore. It's cholitz. It's nischalil. They took away taras ha-mishpacha, the metame marriage. Latame ulechalil. That was the idea. So once the Goyim made these gzeiras and the Rabbanu Shalom broke our legs, now he could heal us. Now by breaking the legs, he enabled the cure to come. Had he not broken our legs, Yidden would have continued on and abandoned everything because they didn't appreciate it. Now that the Goyim made these gzeiras, we began to appreciate it. So the Rabbanu Shalom now started the cure. And he was ma'orer, like the Rambam says, the Ruach HaChashmonoyim, Ruach HaKohanim. And the Yeshua did not come from the physical, external might of the Jewish people against the Greeks, but the internal Kohanim, the internal power of Klal Yisrael against their external power. And that's why the Chashmonoyim were able to go against all those Gzeiras. That was their name. Chashmonoyim is Ches, Chodesh, Shin, Shabbos, Mem, Mila, Mamon, Mishnah, Nun, Nida, Aleph, Eish, Ish. All the gzeiras they made are included in Chashmonoi. And the Yud is just like Yerushalmi, Tel Avivi, right? The Yud is just the Chashmonoi. But those are all the gzeiras were contained in what they were able to go against them. And Bedavka, the Kohanim, not the Malachim, not the soldiers, but the ones who were more the inner spiritual. And that is exactly what the Nace represented. The Nace was, in fact, I was thinking that Chashmonoi can also be split into two words. Chosh Minoi. They're sensitive to that which is inside. They're sensitive to the inside. Chashmonoi. So it says in the Alanisim, everybody has the kasha, it says, Giborim biad chaloshim, rabim biad miatim, tmeim biad tahorim, rishoyim biad tzadikim, zeidim biad oskei sorasecha. So everybody asks, I understand it's a nace if the few and the weak win over the many and the strong. But what's a nace if the tzadikim win over the rishoyim? There's some kind of like unwritten law in nature that rishoyim always win? And if tzadikim win, it's a nace? Why is that part of the nace? So I was thinking, no, that's not what it means. What it means is the following. We won despite the fact that we were few and weak. We didn't win because we were few and weak. So why did we win? Because we had the spiritual edge. We were tzaddikim, tahorim, oskei sorasecha. They had the physical edge, and we had the spiritual edge. There doesn't have to be a conflict between them, but when there is, which is the ikar? The spiritual, not the physical. That is the nace of Hanukkah. That's what you're supposed to learn from it. The ikar in this world is not the chitzonius, it's the pnimius. And that is exactly why in the Alanisim of Hanukkah, the word gadol appears four times. Whereas in the Alanisim of Purim, it doesn't appear even one time. Right? It says, what's it called? Kohen gadol. Ulamcha Yisrael asisa teshua gadolo. Lecho asisa shem gadol. Lehodos ulahalo leshimcha hagadol. Why? Because Yefes, the ancestor of Yop, is called gadol in the Torah. Yefes hagadol. Gadol over there means they're mighty, powerful, numerous. But our concept of gadol is completely different. The Kohen Gadol, how did they pick the Kohen Gadol? They weighed all the Kohanim and measured them, and the tallest, fattest Kohen was the Kohen Gadol. No, it had nothing to do with physical things. It was a spiritual quality that made him the Kohen Gadol. The Mela, that's what Hanukkah teaches. What's godless? Godless is not the external godless, it's the internal godless. And in fact, that is the lesson of the Nes HaShemen. It doesn't make a difference how much you have. You can have a little amount, but if it's tahor, it'll last. And it could have 10 tons of it, and if it's not tahor, it's not useless. That's mamish what the Nes of the Shemen is, and that's the same of the menorah. Zechariah, the Rabban Hashem tells the Navi, he shows him a menorah, he says, you know what it means? And he says, no. He says, I'll tell you what it means. The menorah is supposed to teach you, lo bechayel v'lo bekoach kim baruch yomar Hashem. It's not numbers, it's not external strength, it's Ruach Hashem that makes a difference in this world. Right? Whenever there's a conflict between the external and the internal, the ikar is the internal. And that is the message we say when we sing Mal Sur. We mention all of the Malchios, all the empires that existed, right? And we're standing by the candles. What does it symbolize? The fact, all those empires had everything going for them physically. They had land, they had armies, they had money, they had everything. And where are they? They're not standing by any candle singing about us, because they're in the history books. They don't exist anymore, except for Edom. All the other ones are gone, right? And they had everything going for them physically. And we had the candles, right? We had that inner ore. We're still around singing about them. They're not around singing about us. So what's the ikar? Not what they have, but what we have. That's the inyan of Mol Sur. I just want to explain a Rashi from this coming week's Sedra, which I never saw anybody ask the kasha on the Rashi, and it's halfly a fellow. I think what I'm going to tell you is true. Rashi says a marshal, right? Vayeshev Yaakov. When Yaakov saw all the alufim of Esav in last week's Sedra at the end, he got scared. So when you're afraid the dogs are going to bite you, you don't move. You just sit motionless so you don't incite them. So yet Vayeshev Yaakov, he sat down, he was afraid to move. Omar Lakadish Baruch Hu, the marshal said to Yaakov, what are you afraid of them for? I'll give you a marshal. There was once a Pechami and Pishtani, a blacksmith and a flax dealer. And they were neighbors. And one day the flax dealer got a shipment of flax. They kept bringing camel load upon camel load of flax. And the blacksmith was looking out his window, and he was wondering, where are they going to put all this linen? Where are they going to put all this flax? So Pikeach Echad, one wise guy, said, right, that what's the problem? One spark from your bellows can reduce it all to ashes. They could neatly put it in one little corner. So too, the Rabbanu Shem told Yaakov, what are you afraid of all these aluf and levesov? They're compared to Kash. And you're compared to fire and Yosef, Lehava, right? One spark from you can destroy all of them. I understand the nimshel. I understand the marshal. If I owned a department store and somebody needed cash and he was selling 1,000 stereos at a quarter the price, if I buy them, I can sell them for half price and make up double my money. There's only one problem. You have to buy all of them and you have to pay cash. So I buy them all up and I have a problem now. I don't have a place to put them. I don't have enough storage room. I call my stock boys and I said, we got a big problem. I had to buy these 1,000 stereos. Where are you going to put them? One guy raised his hands. I got a great idea. If we burn them all, we could put the ashes neatly in one room. Right? That's a pikeach. That guy's an idiot. Right? I'll fire him before he fires me. What kind of ridiculous thing is that? The Rashi says, pikeach echad, comes up with this great idea. Right? Now the pshat is, a regular person hears a question, he gives the answer. Where are they going to put all that flax? Room A, B, C. But a pikeach says, what in the world does the blacksmith care where they're going to put the flax? It's his business. It's his achrayis. What does he care? What's he asking? That's not his question. What's really his question is, wow, look at that guy's business. Look at what he has. And what do I have? A hammer, an anvil, a little fire, big deal. All right, this is a business. So the pikeach answers the real question that's hiding behind the question that really is not necessary. And that is, what are you so impressed with his stock when what you have is so much more potent, one spark from that can reduce all of that to nothing? That's the pikeach. A regular person doesn't see what the real question is. So he answers what he seems to be on the surface. A pikeach sees what the real question is. So that's what the same thing. The Chanukah is supposed to teach me, don't be impressed with the externals of this world. Because the Iker is that internal power, not the external things. What Greece represents is not the Iker of this world, it's the internal power that we have. That's the Iker. We said that if nothing would have happened, there wouldn't be any tzara. Klal Yisrael would have been in very dire straits because we would have gone and probably most Jews would have abandoned the Torah completely. The fact that our legs were broken and there was a tzara now made it possible for us to reassess and re-examine where we were holding. And now our legs could be set. And now we're better off than we would have been had not been the tzara and the Yeshua. That's why every Chanukah, the Yevanim try to take away all these things. What were they? Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Bris Milah, and women and money. Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, those were the things. Every Chanukah has those things in them in an extra special way. Every Chanukah is 8 days connected Bris Milah. So, you know, Zecher to Bris Milah during Chanukah. Every Chanukah has one Shabbos at least. Shabbos Chanukah. It's not just Tama Shabbos. Shabbos Chanukah. Every Chanukah has Rosh Chodesh Teves. And it's not Stam Rosh Chodesh. It's the only Rosh Chodesh in the year we say complete Hallel. Because it's Rosh Chanukah. Every Chanukah has the Inyan of what's it called? Money. Chanukah Geld. And every Chanukah, women have a special place in it. Right, because they're the ones who don't do malacha, the nes happened through them, so there's a special place for women. And Chanukah is the only yontif that's not mentioned the halachas of it in the Mishnah. It's only in the Gemara. It remained Torah Shebaal Peh. Never became written down in the Mishnah. So all the aspects of the things the Yevanim wanted to take away are incorporated in Chanukah. I'll tell you another medrash. A few more minutes. And then I'll tell you the... something light at the end, which is also a pun, but in any case, something. The Medrash says like this, Hadudoyim nosnu reyach, it's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Hadudoyim nosnu reyach, ve'al psocheinu kol megodim, chadoshim gam yishonim, dodi tzofanti loch, that's a pasuk. Says the Medrash, Hadudoyim nosnu reyach, ze ruvein shehitzilis Yosef, ve'al psocheinu kol megodim, ze ner chanuk. So, first of all, how is Dudoyim hint to Reuven who saved Yosef? It should have said, how Dudoyim not some rares. That Reuven, Shavi Dudoyim, Leimo. Where's the, what did that do with saving Yosef? That was a different episode. Reuven brought the Dudoyim. And what in the world does all of that have to do with Ner Chanukah? So, thinking the pshats like this. Reuven, of all the brothers, should not have brought the Dudoyim to his mother. His mother stopped having kids. And the Dudayim, the Rishonim say, were a fertility drug. Okay, so we're back a little bit to where to her. They were a fertility drug. Reuven found them. His mother never asked him for them. And if anybody shouldn't want his mother to have more kids, it's him. Why? Because he's a Bechor. He loses double for every new kid. That's why Ham, Canaan, right, got rid of Noach's ability to have children, because they said, you know, enough with three kids to split up the Yerusha. We don't need any more. So Reuven, if anything, right, should have not brought his mother to Dudayim. So why did he? Because he acted to her like a son. He wanted to do his mother's will, not just what she commanded. She didn't tell him to do it, but he wanted to make her happy. Nachas Ruach to my mother, right? Even though at my expense. That's the same Reuven who tried to save Yosef. Yosef was the biggest contender to take away the what's it called, the Bechora, the Malchus. And at that time, Reuven was the Melech and the Bechor and the Kohen, and Yosef was the one who was threatening to take her all away. So Reuven could have just kept quiet, let them take care of Yosef, and he would benefit. But Lahashiva Loviv, he had Rachmanis on his father. Same way that Hadudoyim Nosnu Reach, that she treated his mother to make her Nachas Ruach, is the same way, even though it was against his best interest, he was interested in saving Yosef against his best interest to make his father have Nachas Ruach. And that's the same thing with the Chashmonoim, with Ner Chanukah. In the beginning, they were just people who were avodim to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. They did, what's it called, mitzvahs. But they didn't do Ratzon Hashem. Bizman she'ein osim ritzono shel makom nikroim avodim. Bizman she'osim ritzono shel makom nikroim bonim. So that was that koach of bonim that was, what's it called, created near Chanukah. That's why it says in the Alanisim, the achar kein bo bonechol in fir beisecho. They came back to being bonim and not just avodim, not just doing a bunch of external mitzvahs, but doing Ratzon Hashem. And lastly, when I first came to Eretz Yisrael, so it was a lot of culture shock in many things here, but one of them was Chanukah. And that was in Chutz Laaretz at least 30 years ago. Now the Israeli influence could be different, but Lamaisa, 30 years ago, the food of Chanukah in Chutz Laaretz was latkes, right? That's latkes and Chanukah, like, go together. So you had a Chanukah party, you made latkes. And we were the dorm parents in Tells in Cleveland, and the guys didn't go home for Chanukah, so they were all homesick. So my wife made about 2,000 latkes over Chanukah to give out at night in the dorms, so the guys would have a little feeling of home. The latkes were probably a lot better than their mothers made, but in any case, at least, but they remembered their mother's latkes were. In any case, so I came to Eretz Yisrael. I go to a Chanukah party the first day, no latkes. Jelly donuts. What in the world jelly donuts have to do with Chanukah, right? Could have given out candy apples. What in the world do I do with Chanukah? So next day, again, jelly donuts. No latkes. Until the third day of Chanukah, I passed by an army base near the Moshav, and there was a gigantic billboard with one word on it and an arrow pointing toward the base, latkes. I said, wow, at least in the army, they preserve the minig of eating latkes. And not only that, they publicize it. Somebody told me, no, that says latkes. That doesn't say latkes. In any case, but after thinking about it, the Israeli style is more in keeping with Chanukah. Why do we eat latkes on Chanukah? Because they're made in oil. And I'm sure if you put a wick in a latke and light it, it would last for 2-3 weeks, right, without any nisim, okay? So the latkes are reminiscent of the mitzvah of the nace of the oil. Now, jelly donuts are the same thing. You make them in oil, so they remind you of the nace. But there's something more significant about jelly donuts. Jelly donuts give you the following message. The ikkar is not what's on the outside. The ikkar is on what's on the inside. And that is exactly the message of Chanukah. So, Mirz Hashem, that is what a person should be thinking about on Chanukah, that koach that we have that is so much greater than the external koach of what Greece and the Western world today represents. Okay, Shabbat, happy Chanukah. Bach is in the beginning.